Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today I'll be talking with writer and producer Brian Bird about the film he's written called The Case for Christ, which is based on the best-selling book by Lee Strobel. Brian and I will also be chatting about season 4 of the Christopher Award-winning TV series When Calls the Heart. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is Brian Bird. Now, I talked with Brian on this show a couple of years ago about When Calls the Heart, the Hallmark Channel series he co-created. And then last year, I had the pleasure of meeting Brian at the annual Christopher Awards ceremony when we honor the show with a special award for its outstanding storytelling that appeals to the whole family. Well, today, Brian and I are going to discuss the show's fourth season, as well as a feature film he wrote called The Case for Christ. It's the true story of Lee Strobel, a Chicago Tribune journalist who is also an atheist. Now, Strobel set out to disprove Christianity, but instead wound up converting to the Christian faith. To tell us more, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Brian Bird. Brian, it's great to have you back on the show again.
Tony, I always love being with you. Really love what you're doing there.
Thank you very much. Well, now, we're going to talk about When Calls the Heart a little bit later, but you also have this new movie coming out called The Case for Christ. You're the screenwriter of the movie, and I think a lot of people are familiar with the book, Lee Strobel's book. So I saw the trailer online, and I'm just curious, because Lee Strobel was a journalist, he was an atheist, and he kind of he goes to investigate Christianity because his wife converted. I'm curious, how antagonistic was he towards Christianity? I mean, is that all depicted in the movie?
It is, actually. If you've read his book, anybody who's read his book, they realize that he was recreating his quest to debunk Christianity. The initial quest that he did was while he was at the Tribune, the Chicago Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
And Leslie had become a Christian at Willow Creek Church in Chicago, and Lee's whole motivation was to rescue his wife from the cult.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what his take on the whole thing was.
Mm-hmm.
And he was antagonistic. He had a huge axe to grind, and you'll see, if you get a chance to see the movie, you'll see the many ways in which, there was a deep conflict in that marriage. I mean, it's really, The Case for Christ is as much an apologetics or an investigation of Christianity. It's as much that as it is a love story between Lee and Leslie. He
mm-hmm.
deeply loved his wife, and he didn't want to lose his marriage, but he really felt like this newfound faith that Leslie had undertaken was like an affair. I mean, he literally said that to her. He said, "You have another man. His name is Jesus in your life."
Yeah, yeah.
And so the movie is full of antagonism from Lee, but we love the guy because he loves his family and he's
mm-hmm.
desperately trying to save his family. And that's what I find so fascinating about the story is that the protagonist is a skeptic. He's an atheist who's trying to. He's trying to undermine the faith, of billions of people, and he can't do it. That's what's so fascinating about his story.
Well, what do you think it says about Lee as a journalist, that he was able to investigate a matter? Like you said, he actively wanted to disprove it, but instead of rejecting facts that didn't fit into the narrative he wanted, he was honest enough to follow the truth where it led.
Well, that's right, because he did have a bias, obviously, and there's... In the story, we sort of reveal why that formed in his life. He had a deeply painful relationship with his own father,
mm-hmm.
and he discovered along the way that all of the most famous atheists in history had a huge father wound.
Huh. Okay.
And it's fact. All of the great ones, all the lighthouses of sort of skepticism in history either had fathers that were abusive or who died prematurely when they were young,
mm-hmm.
Or who were cold to them and
yeah.
abusive and estranged. And so, you know, and he had that experience in his own life. So he discovered that his bias was also rooted in his own upbringing, as much as it was his own skepticism. And so as a journalist, he had to, because he was a good journalist. This was a man who was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. This was a man who won awards. He was the young journalist who uncovered the Ford Pinto scandal, mm-hmm. and really wrote the book on that whole scandal and sort of took down a car company over that. And so he was a really he was the kind of guy who, you know, you would see, you know, at the head of a network or publishing a big newspaper now, had he not had this change in his life. So he wanted to be a fair journalist. And what he realized at the end of this quest to try to save his wife and debunk Christianity is that the evidence was too overwhelming mm-hmm. for the faith. Yeah. There was too much there not to give it some, you know, give it a look. And so it's a fascinating story and a powerful love story, but also this powerful, almost sort of thriller in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Brian Bird. He's the screenwriter of the movie The Case for Christ, which is based on Lee Strobel's book. I mean, I read the book probably maybe 10 or 15 years ago, too, like you said. And one of the things that struck me about it is, you know, some books explore the historical Jesus in order to debunk the theological view. But like you were just saying, Strobel's book does the opposite. It looks at the history, then affirms the theology. Now, as an atheist writing that book, did he get a lot of blowback from other non-believers when it came out? Obviously, he was embraced, I'm sure, by the Christian community. But what about the other side of things?
Of course, yeah. You know, look, the trolls have always come out, and, mm-hmm. and he has no problem meeting with the world's leading skeptics and going toe to toe with them, mm-hmm. and honoring them and respecting them for their beliefs. You know, he's not looking to take down people. He's not that kind of a man. He just said, look, I'm presenting what I found. I'm presenting the facts here, and there's evidence that demands a verdict, as Josh McDowell said years and years ago. And Lee came to that same conclusion. Mm-hmm. And when I went back and reread the book and dug did another deep dive into the research for this story, I had forgotten even some of it myself as a person of faith for, you know, most of my life. And mm-hmm. it's very compelling. I mean, the evidence for the faith is very compelling, and you don't have to, like you said, you don't have to prove the theology. All you have to do, for instance, you know, the resurrection story, you don't have to prove a miracle mm-hmm. to prove the resurrection. You just have to prove that Jesus actually died on the cross mm-hmm. and that he was seen by 500 witnesses afterwards. Yeah. That's all you have to prove.
Mm-hmm.
The rest takes care of, you know, takes care of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's I can't tell you how meaningful this project was for me as a writer and producer. I think it's the most meaningful thing that I've ever done in 30 years of doing this work.
Wow.
And I believe it's going to resonate with millions of people, and it's going to be transformational for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
I sure hope so.
Sure. No, I mean, I saw the trailer, and I saw you do have Faye Dunaway in the cast and a lot of other great people. Just talk about
right.
seeing it come to life on screen.
You know, it was the movie is set in 1980 because that's when Lee did his investigation into Christianity
mm-hmm.
While he was at the Chicago Tribune. So I've never done a project that we actually were trying to recreate 1980 or the 70s.
Some
it is
interesting hairstyles and clothes, right?
exactly. I had to dig deep into my own, you know, memory of my high school and in college years for you know, to remember what it was like, but.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that part of it was just a blast for us to be able to have to go back and try to, you know, look. We didn't have cell phones, right?
mm-hmm.
We had early pagers back in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So it changes the way you tell a story, even. So for me, it was just a phenomenal experience to bring that world to life. But I have to say that the actors who said yes to us for this movie, and there were some that didn't, because this, you know, the title of this movie is The Case for Christ. They're, that is going to, you know, weed some people out. But Mike Vogel as Lee Strobel and Erica Christensen as Leslie Strobel are just going to blow people away.
Right.
They are so compelling and so amazing in these two roles. So to be involved in the nuances of real marriage and what that was like for them, and the fact that they were mismatched spiritually in their relationship after Leslie found faith in Jesus. To be involved in a project that deals authentically with those nuances and those conflicts in a real marriage, but tells it in the milieu of 1980. You know, it feels like all of a piece to me, and I'm just so thrilled with how it's turned out.
Yeah. So everybody, please take a look. The Case for Christ, that opens in April. You can check the trailer out online. I'm talking to Brian Bird. He is the screenwriter and one of the producers of The Case for Christ, and he is also the co-creator and executive producer, of the Christopher Award-winning series When Calls the Heart, which just started its fourth season. So, Brian, I want to talk about that a little bit. Now, just in case there's anybody listening who has not seen When Calls the Heart, who isn't familiar with it, just give us a brief synopsis of what this show is about.
Sure. Well, this show, Michael Landon Jr. and I created based on a best-selling piece of Christian fiction by the author Jeanette Oak. And some folks may remember her from her Love Comes Softly series of books. This was her next best-selling series of books, the When series, the When Calls the Heart series. And it's about a, set in 1910, it's about a wealthy young school teacher who takes the challenge to go west and to teach school in a hard scrabble coal mining town in roughly Alberta, Canada. And she leaves the safety of her family and life in the big city and goes west, and she pursues her passion to lift young minds out of their hardship and open them up to the opportunities of the world, and in the meantime falls in love with a handsome young Royal Canadian Mountie.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack and Elizabeth, Elizabeth Thatcher and Jack Thornton, her Mountie beau, and it all happens in a town called Hope Valley, which is really a throwback to the values of yesteryear. And I think that's why people are loving the show so much, is that it harkens back to the great virtues of, you know, hope, faith, and love, and courage, and nobility, and redemption, and forgiveness, and sacrifice, and communities pulling together to, you know, help each other in times of need. And, you know, in our polarized society these days, those great virtues are in short supply, it seems, sometimes. And I think the fans of When Calls the Heart have rallied to this show in big numbers because they don't see anything like it anywhere else on television.
No, it's very true, and it airs on the Hallmark Channel Sunday nights at 9, 8 Central, and you know, I just mentioned the Christopher Spirit Award last year because of, like what you said, it's the family and faith-friendly storytelling the show does, and it was especially great for me to hear the prayer of St. Francis as a story element in the Christmas movie last December. So I'm just curious, how do you think that prayer captures the spirit and the spirituality of When Calls the Heart?
You know, I just think that the idea that people of faith or people who are like-minded in terms of their value system, they do bring peace upon the earth. I think it's the answer. It's the cure for what ails us, and we love the fact that the Hallmark Channel allows us to explore some of those themes of faith. We don't, you know, try not to hammer people over the head with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's in the tradition of Michael's father's show, Little House on the Prairie. It's similar in its tone. that family and faith and community are the most important things in our lives, and that when we live there, you know, where God guides, He provides.
Yeah, yeah.
And we and people are responding to that message, and I think that it's so it's counter programming to basically everything else that's on television right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hallmark Channel seem in just a few other places on TV seem to be, you know, holding a candle for, you know, programs that whole families can watch together. And it's what most of us grew up experiencing in this world. You know, we would watch our favorite TV shows with our parents, mm-hmm. all in the same room. We weren't divided off onto our little tablets in little niches watching, you know, being compartmentalized and fragmented like that. We were having a family experience that often led to teachable moments for us,
sure,
right,
yeah.
as kids growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't exist anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I just think that people are starved to death for those kinds of values. That's what we're trying to give them in When Calls the Heart. And you mentioned the Christmas movie. 5 million people showed up on Christmas night to watch that movie.
Yeah.
And it sort of blew all of our other viewership numbers away by about 1 million people.
Right. You know, I was surprised myself because I wasn't sure if people are home watching television Christmas night. But for your show, apparently they made an exception.
You and me both. I was petrified.
I'm talking to Brian Bird. He is the co-creator and one of the executive producers of the Hallmark Channel series, When Calls the Heart. It airs Sunday nights at 9, 8 central. Well, one aspect of the story that I've enjoyed especially is that of Lori Loughlin's character, Abigail, foster parenting or adopting these two young orphans. And I'm just curious, was that a topic that just came up among the writers as an interesting story element, or was there some history among the staff of foster parenting or adoption in your life or the writers' lives?
Well, I will say that there's two answers to that. Yes to all of that. my wife and I are adoptive parents twice over. We have two adopted daughters, mm-hmm. in our family, and my wife was a foster child for many years of her young life. And so foster care, orphan care has always been an important theme to us. And simultaneously, after the first season, and we were sort of waiting to see if the Hallmark Channel was going to renew the show for a second season, Lori Loughlin and I were having a conversation, and she just sort of out of the blue said, you know what would be a cool story is for Abigail Stanton, who she plays, who is a widow. There was a coal mine disaster in season one, and she lost her husband and her grown son in that disaster. She said, wouldn't it be cool if Abigail could adopt a child in mm-hmm. season two? And we took that idea and began to you know, spin on that. And in my own experience with adoption, I believe that adoption is sort of in the DNA of the universe, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
As people of faith, you know, we're all adopted by God. So the adoption is important to God, I believe. And I also believe that love is thicker than blood.
Great way to put it, yeah.
In that context. And so when I, you know, spoke to Lori about that sort of theological underpinning of adoption in my own experience, it was like just a beautiful connecting point. And the Hallmark Channel loved the idea of it. And so we have loved that relationship between, you know, Abigail and Cody, her young adopted son.
You know, I think it just opened up the story in so many great and interesting ways that, you know, it just went in new directions. So I'm glad you guys did that. And let me just talk about ask a question about the opposite of good Abigail for a second. Because if the show has a villain, I would say it's Henry Gowan, who's played by Martin Cummins, played very well. And sometimes it seems like he might be on a redemptive track, but then he seems to reverse course or at least leave viewers unsure of his character. Tell us a little bit about Henry Gowan. Is redemption possible for this man?
Well, look, I I have always believed in my work as a storyteller in, you know, 30 years of doing this, that, you know, every villain was somebody's baby once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. They're not cartoons. They're not twisting their mustache for no reason when they are being villainous. And, you know, there is nature and nurture involved. If we are the product of both. Our DNA and our upbringing and our socialization. So for Henry Gowan, we always hold out hope that, you know, that he will see the light of day. And there have been glimpses of that humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I have always believed that every villain needs to have a piece of the truth somewhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to own some of the truth along with, you know, whatever your machinations are. So for Henry, he speaks truth sometimes. Every story needs an antithesis, right?
Yes.
To the thesis.
Mm-hmm.
If the thesis of One Calls the Heart is the great virtues, then you need the antithesis of that represented so you can get to a synthesis, so you can get to an integration of those things. And so if Henry sees the light, if Henry has a redemption story and sees the light, like Pastor Frank clearly had in our storytelling, then ultimately we got to find somebody else to hold the to carry those bags.
That's
right?
True.
And
yeah.
In season four, there is somebody else who starts to step up to do that.
Okay.
So it you know, without giving too many spoilers away there, you know, we totally see the power of what you're saying, of the potential of redemption, but also, you know, the potential of our dark side pulling us back.
Yeah. Well, I will say that again, the actor Martin Cummins, he plays both parts equally well. When you see the glimmers, you have hope, and then yet sometimes he just, you know, you just want to smack him in the head for what he's doing. So he really does an outstanding job.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, we love Martin and what he does for us.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'm talking to Brian Bird. He is the executive producer, co-creator of the Christopher Award-winning series When Calls the Heart. It airs Sunday nights at 9, 8 central. Before we close, I got to ask a question about the show's fans who are known as the Hardys. Now, I looked it up. Last time we spoke, about 2 years ago, there were 23,000 Hardys, and I checked the other day, and there was 45,000 on the Facebook page. It's probably even gone up more by now. So just tell me what these fans have meant to the success of this series.
Well, I got to say, I believe that the Hardys, and that's H-E-A-R-T-I-E-S, kind of like Trekkies, right?
Yes.
Like the Star Trek fans. Well, we have Hardys, and they are, I believe, Trekkies on steroids. That's the way I like to talk about them. They are fans who found the show, begin to talk amongst one another on Facebook and Twitter. I happened to see some of this conversation bubbling up on social media, and I talked to Michael Landon Jr. and Brad Crevoy, our other partner, and said, guys, there's an organic grassroots movement starting to happen here. And I have no idea what we're supposed to do at this point other than just talk to them. And so we began talking to them. We began to correspond with them. And that level of engagement and that personal sort of touch that we provided and vice versa has led to a true fan movement I like to say they're the, and Hallmark Channel says that our show has become the most social show on television in terms of social media. We trend on Twitter every time we're on the air. You know, the show airs Sunday nights at 9, as you said, 8 central. And during about a 4-hour block on Twitter, we are trending nationally.
That's great.
The Hardys, hashtag Hardys, trend nationally. They are people that are starved to death. That's the best way I can put it. They're starved to death for this kind of value programming and these kinds of family-friendly and faith-friendly themes. We also believe deeply in that, in the sense of community that's formed among the Hardys. They have Hardys parties every week. somewhere around the country, there are Hardee's parties. And we talk to them. We Skype in. We talk, you know, we even visit these parties sometimes. There's a sense of community happening. There's people praying for one another. There's friendships being formed. It's kind of like church, mm-hmm. in a way.
Yeah.
A version of church. And so all I know is that they invented themselves. We decided to talk back to them, and it's turned into now 46,000 on the group page on Facebook. And there are hundreds of thousands of them, though, out there who are talking amongst themselves on all the other social media platforms.
Yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking to Brian Bird about two of his big projects. One is the Hallmark Channel's When Calls the Heart TV series, Sunday nights at 9, 8 Central. We were just talking about the fan base, the Hardees. Brian said before, this show is providing food for people who are starved for family-friendly entertainment, faith-friendly entertainment, and it's doing a wonderful job. It's in season 4. I think the Hardees are going to demand a season 5, and I hope Hallmark Channel responds, because this is really one of the great stories of modern television. Of, like Brian said, you can sit down with your family from grandpa to the parents to the kids, however young they are, and this show will give them a great topic of conversation, a great entertaining story. And Brian is also a busy man. He screenwrote the new film, The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel, another project everybody should check out. So Brian, thanks so much for all the work you're doing. I hope you get time to rest once in a while, because you sound like a busy guy, and thanks for sharing your insights with us today.
Thanks, Tony. Always an honor to be with you, and really appreciate your interest in what's happening right now.
Thank you. Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
The grace of God has a way of sneaking up on us. And if we're not paying attention, it might even slip right past us. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Opening Yourself to God's Grace. It will help you become more aware of the moments in your life when God makes his presence known in unexpected ways. Moments that can draw beauty out of brokenness and allow you to experience the depths of his love. To request your free copy of Opening Yourself to God's Grace, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.